This is such a huge moment for humanity. There's so many opportunities to see how the world really works. The dependencies that we have on the system that's assumed, that's unseen, that we've just all expected to work, that we've inherited, is something that I've been looking at for years, that it's not actually truly sustainable. How can we take products sent from Peru over to China to be processed and then distributed all over the world? How does that continue? How did that even get started? We've made such assumptions about such basic things. The thing that always brings me back is the idea of needs versus wants, and that it's such a key point of confusion for people. I had a marketing class where the first lesson that we had was that our job was to create false need. And my head popped up and I looked around to see if anybody heard that it was to lie, to create false need, something that's not really truly a need. To say that we aren't enough, that we always need something more, that we have to stay addicted, always wanting, always putting our identity, ourself, in our purchases, in how we look, and how we're liked. And when we confuse needs versus wants, it's completely fucked. Because at the end of the day, we need water, we need breath, we need food, we need shelter, we need love, we need safety. Anything outside of that's a want. So it brings up the question of entitlement, and not to blame anyone, because it's something that we've been told from the moment we were born that we need these things. Well, now that we're in this coronavirus situation, it's becoming more clear what is a need, what is essential. There's a lot of stuff on social media about what are essential businesses, because people don't even know the difference, you know? And at this point, with society the way it is electricity, it is water, it is sewage, it is trash, it's police, it's healthcare, so that people don't die and that people don't freak out on the streets. And that's totally fair given the way society is right now. But if it comes down to us being at home in a forced hermit mode meditation, facing ourselves most times for the first time from the noise and the construction of our world, the construction of what we think we are, what we think we need to do based on what we've been taught from such early ages, that we need to work, we need to provide, we need to check off the boxes to be a good society member, all of those things, all of a sudden it's completely shut down and we don't even have it as an option. So here we are, all together as humanity, being shut down, which is out of our control, which is terrifying, which puts us into survival mode. Then we have options, right? Usually the option in survival mode is fight, flight, freeze. Fight is to be upset that nobody's handling it right, to try to fix it all, to try to be the perfect overachieving person in your house, having a million schedules and trying to learn a million things. Freeze is to do nothing, to try to go to sleep, to drink through it, to numb yourself, to run away. But once you actually step outside of survival mode and you say, okay, well, here I am, I have no option but to face being here in my house with the people I love, not picking fights, not trying to control each other, not trying to fix everything all at once, but just to be with each other. It's an incredible opportunity to fall in love with each other, fall in love with ourselves again instead of hate ourselves, which is what most of us have been taught to do. Even this whole movement in climate change, it's like humanity is a curse on the earth and a plague on the earth. And, you know, at the end, what is it? It's saying that we're worthless and we have nothing to offer and that we should hate ourselves and what, die? And that's crazy, because humanity is amazing. It's amazing. It's got so much potential that we've forgotten as a collective. what we can create, what we can change, our resiliency, our love, our ability to help each other, our ability to solve problems, our ability to look at things from multiple perspectives, to process it, to be rational, to be inspired, to work with a bit of faith. Like, these things are absolutely incredible parts of humanity. And I guess what I want to say is that it's so fair to be scared right now, to lose your job, to have fear of death or sickness, to be separated from loved ones, to not have an income and not be able to provide those needs. But I so hope that this is an opportunity that people see these structures that we've created, that we've depended on, aren't actually sound. And that means, what next? I mean, that's terrifying, because what it means is responsibility. What it means is action. What it means is something new. And what is that new thing? We don't know. But I would say this modern society as we've known it has only existed for like 100 years. And yes, thousands if you kind of go back to Roman Empire and things like that. But like, if you look at even basic hot showers, which people take for granted as a need, right? Well, even a few generations ago, there were still people, my husband included, whose grandparents would have a hose down in the basement where there was pressure with like a little shower head attached, maybe, if not just a drip, and that was how they did it. Or people, you know, heated water of their stoves and they bathed in a family tub, you know. I'm not saying that's ideal. I'm saying that's what people did. And it was what people did for thousands and thousands of years, and they were fine. I mean, certainly there's quality of life things that we can consider, and more sickness, things like that. So I'm not saying it's an ideal. I'm saying that there are these things that our ancestors have done before this modern world that were quite sufficient and sometimes kind of fun. But I guess when we look at the needs, the food, water, love, shelter, whole list of things, the earth actually provides them, but we've gotten so far away from understanding how the cycles of the earth provide these things that we've taken them for granted. And I guess now it's like, well, we still have some of these things in place. We still have electric, we still have internet, we still have pumping water. And so first I feel like gratitude and actually seeing these systems and being like, oh my gosh, I get to wake up, have a shower, heat up my stuff on a stove or even an instant microwave or whatever, and just see it, be able to recognize how incredible it is, the ease, the convenience that we have it in the first place, that we don't have to hunt, gather, be hunched over the land, that we have these things and they're still not gone. But I would say that if we can move in the opposite direction with that gratitude, and not saying we have to undo everything, but just simply saying, you know, where can we take responsibility for the more sustainable, resilient local economies that people have done in the past? And it would be, okay, let's look at food, for example. Food grows from the earth in abundance. You like, it releases a bunch of seeds, you plant them and they grow, or you take a clipping, you stick it in the ground, you plant it and it grows. Sometimes you can just cut the tops off of things like pineapples, or whatever, you plant them and they grow. And yes, they take time, they take a little bit of effort, they take some nurturing. You have to think about the soil and what goes into it. These things are skills that are being lost. Knowing how to make a balanced soil, knowing that it comes from the scraps of your yard, the scraps from your food, and you can literally just give it time and the right amounts of water, air, and time, and carbon and nitrogen. There's certainly things to learn, but if you do that and you put it into the earth, you have incredibly nutritious organic soil that things just immediately grow from. And yet people don't know this stuff, and it's certainly some information, but it's not that complicated. My kids do it. My 3 and my 4.5-year-old can compost, and they're so excited to find all the worms and the black earth that all their trashy food turns into, and that they know that it grows into something. So that's just one thing. It's like, okay, let's grow food. Okay, well then what happens when there's a food scarcity? Well, people, and a food abundance, well, people preserved it. And here's the thing, preserving is like, there's certainly things to know. You don't want to like have botulism or like exploded jars or anything like that. So there's things to learn. between anaerobic and anaerobic fermentation, having the right jars that release gas if things are releasing gas, you know, like some sauerkrauts and kimchis. But the thing is, like, these things are trendy and cool, but they're also ridiculously nutritious. They're actually surprisingly easy. A lot of things, you literally just cut up, put in a jar, and add vinegar and water. And, like, you make sure that things are clean. You, like, boil stuff. But it's doable. It's so doable. And a lot of it is crazy delicious. Like, we have these relishes, and we have these, like, kimchis. And seriously, you can make, like, a plate of eggs or, like, rice and just add any of the things that we have. And they're so good. And people were like, oh, yeah, you know, I think this was the original condiment. And we're like, dude, this is what people did. This is what people did in Asia. It's what people did in the Middle East. That's why the food is so flavorful and nutritious, because it's got all the natural probiotics and spices and things like that to, like, nourish your body in so many ways. And it's so doable. It's like, we have tons of reusable jars that things come in glass. We scrub off the labels because I like the way it looks. And then we just put things in them and give them time. And all of a sudden, we've got a backstock of a ton of awesome food. And, like, yeah, it's some cutting. And yeah, it's some, like, it's not even that much measuring. But it's some, like, cutting, and it's some storing. And that's it. So then there's so much preservation without electricity, without buying a bunch of stuff. Yeah, you need some salt. You need some vinegar. Those are, like, the basics. A lot of it's, like, a little bit of effort and a little bit of time. And then we've got that, you know, and there's all these things that my husband's been trying to teach me about water. Like, you've got running water that most of, like, if it's just the natural systems, it comes down and it's pure. Nature actually cleans and purifies it for us, and then we drink it. But we've decided to put tons of chemicals, fertilizers, pesticides, all this stuff, and then it becomes completely toxic, and then all of a sudden we've got to chlorinate it. Well, here in Peru, there are these old terrace systems with these ancient water channels built in, and what's wild is that they would work together as a community to seal them and upkeep them and keep things from growing in them, and they would seal them with a natural cactus juice, and then there'd be no runoff, and in the terraces, they'd have multiple layers of, like, silt and sands that by the time the water would get to the water channels, it would aerate in the water channels and have UV light that would kill the microbes, that by the time it got to the bottom, it was drinkable, clean, pure water, and it would water everything on its way down. These systems exist, and our ancestors knew them, and, like, now we have them piped through. There's, you know, there's things growing in the pipes, there's chemicals added to it, there's all this runoff, but, like, in the original state, it was amazing. And even in Venezuela, like, we were talking to some people that had been through absolute hell, and they're like, my family's actually doing okay because we know how to filter our own water. It's not something that we've forgotten. Like, the grandparents knew that sand and some rocks and some carbon would filter drinkable water. And there are projects, like nonprofit projects, that are bringing drinkable water with this totally low-tech solutions, and, like, almost all the time materials that are available everywhere. There, we have a filter that's a ceramic pot that takes out a lot of the sediment, and all you have to do is paint it with colloidal silver, and it kills off, like, 99.9% of the bacteria and viruses. There are solutions for these things. There are low-cost, local, sustainable solutions for these things. But you know what? People haven't invested in them because you can't make money on them, because our ceramic filter is good for almost ever. And so this stuff has been kept from us, because if we knew how to do this stuff on our own, we wouldn't need to buy all the things, be totally dependent on the system. And I'm not saying that these systems shouldn't be there, but I do hope that these skills aren't lost. And I feel like this time, this opportunity, is to learn some of this stuff, this totally available information, to learn that we can grow our food, learn how, rehab our environment, have unbelievably healthy results because of it, ferment it to preserve it so we have a backstock for later, have drinkable water, you know, learning eco-building skills. Like, there's so many unbelievable just, like, earth-building skills, and using trash. Check out Mike Reynolds. He's literally building things with trash and dirt and making totally warm and cool homes depending on like what time of year, because there's ventilation systems and there's thermal earth mass that's absorbing the heat from the sun that keeps the place warm during the cold seasons and then cool during the warm seasons. And there people are doing this, you know? And so it's just so hopeful. It's so amazing. It's so accessible. It's so reasonable. And I just hope that during this time, you know, people look at themselves, they look at how they're spending their time, they see the cracks in the system, and we start doing something about it. You know, we have a compost toilet. It's literally a bucket in a box with a toilet cover. It has the most amazing view of the mountains ever. My kids love it because it's open air. It actually feels weird to go into a tiny little room with weird smells to use the potty. I'm a mom. To use the bathroom. And so here we are, where we're flushing like 2.5 gallons to 6 gallons of water. Like, measure that out. If you are ever out of water, go buy that stock of water and then think of every flush, just literally flushing it down, the work that it took you to get there, the bottling, the pumping it from the aquifer, the money it took, and think about literally actually flushing that down the toilet for one flush. And it becomes so blatantly obvious that what we take from the earth, you put back. That includes our poop. And you can do it in such reasonable ways. And I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like, we have to get sawdust, you have to like tote buckets, like there is some effort involved. I'm not gonna say there's not, but we can do it, and we like it, and it's not that hard. So if things do ever happen where we would need it, we have the skills, we have the know-how, we have the ability to do that. And people thought for a long time, like, why are you guys doing that? And we're like, well, you know, one is it's nice to tread lightly on the earth and not use so many resources and be more sustainable. But at the same time, like, we are under the assumption that all of these systems that go unseen will just continue to work. And how do they work? They work because of cheap oil. They work because of huge multinational companies that have, you know, subsidies to pay for these things to keep them cheap. But they actually, just in the pure form of them, they don't really work. And so this is just such an amazing opportunity to, like, look at that stuff and go, you know, maybe I want to sew my stuff. Maybe I don't have to learn all this stuff, but maybe I really, like, have wanted to pick up sewing, and I can, like, make things out of things that I don't wear anymore. I can turn them into something else. Maybe I can make them beautiful and learn how to embroider them, or just darn things. I find it so satisfying when, like, my boys' pants get a hole in them that I can stitch them up, or like if a strap on my backpack falls off, I can fix it. I was an American that literally was down in Peru and my backpack strap broke, and I went, hey, where's a place I can buy a backpack? And the guy looked at me like I was crazy. And he's like, there's a place that you can fix that for two soles, 60 cents. And I was like, what? And I went, and it was fixed. And I didn't buy another one. One less thing for the landfill. One less thing that has to be shipped across nations, you know, using post-peak oil to get it there. And it was fixed. We haven't bought anything in, like, 6 years, because it turns out you can make so much stuff, and there's so much secondhand stuff, and you can create, and, like, it won't be like that forever. It might not be like that forever. Maybe it will. That's great. But, like, just treading on the earth a little bit lighter, taking more responsibility for our consumption, and understanding that these things come from somewhere, and just seeing how it all works and wondering how we got here, and doing something to maybe shift in another direction, and using this time to do something about it, to be a little more prepared the last time, to take a little less for granted, to be a little more grateful, to have the satisfaction of making and doing something ourselves. It's deeply satisfying. It's deeply, yeah, it's profound. It's really esteem building. So I know this time is intense. I get it. I feel it. I see it. I see that people are scared. I'm uncomfortable. We're deeply prepared, and I still feel it. You know, the possibility of losing work, the possibility of, you know, and being at home a lot more. facing being with our kids and being that mom and dad that we really want to be, or maybe that we really don't. You know, there's also, speaking of kids, there's so many more kids at home, and like, we've all learned in a very specific way, and that very specific way is to help create jobs for these huge corporations to work to pay off our debt that we took because we need these jobs. And there were different ways of learning, and there's a lot of people that have been doing much different educational practices with their kids. There's a TED talk that's like, education kills creativity, and like, we see the evidence around it. We see, like, when you talk to somebody like, oh, when did you stop liking to learn? And it was in school, when somebody felt stupid for asking a question that they just didn't understand or whatever. But there's a lot of ways and a lot of methods out there. Waldorf's a good example. Montessori's a good example. I listened to a woman called Lori Pareto who does like conscious parenting. It's called Teach Through Love. And like, there's a lot of different ways that we can talk to our kids that aren't about controlling them, that aren't about forcing them into a schedule and forcing them into a society that's just kind of, you know, maybe not so healthy. And it's all been built, but it doesn't have to be. And so maybe this time is a time that you want to like reconnect with your kids and really ask them, like, what do you want to do today? What's bothering you? What are you afraid of? You know? And like, I feel like kids have so little rights. They're forced on what to wear, where to go, who to talk to, who to play with. They like can't drive anywhere until they're 16. So they're literally dependent on everything for the parent. And then the parent's just like, well, we've got the schedule, so we need to sleep, so we need to do this. And that's fair. I get it. That's how the world is. But like, where can we stretch that a little bit to honor that this little human is trying to figure out a world that's super confusing and weird? How do we do that? Maybe we ask them, hey, how are you feeling today? What's going on with you? Maybe if they ask for something, say, hey, I really want to understand why you want that so badly. Can we do this? Can we figure something else out? Do you have any ideas? I'd love to hear your ideas. You know, how do we create confident kids who really love to learn and get excited? How do we encourage their gifts rather than smash them for being weird? You know, how do we be with them instead of being distracted or putting them on an iPad and be distracted? How do we engage them in a way that's really fun, that just adds learning into day-to-day life? Hey, how many apples are we cutting? Great, let's make this. Fantastic. They get to get in there. They get to use stuff. They get to learn a real skill. They get to spend time with mommy or daddy or both. Or daddy and daddy. You know what I mean. But this time is precious. This time is an opportunity to see more, to feel more, to process it, to ask yourself what you want, to ask yourself, why are you afraid? So is it death we're afraid of? Is it failure? Is it starving? Is it suffering? What is it? And it's okay to feel those things. It really is. And I think starting there, that it's okay to feel those things, and it's totally valid and understandable. But then we also go, hey, what can we do? What now? How can I help myself? How can I get through this? There's a lot of things for mental health that are natural, medicinal, in the natural way. Magnesium that comes from greens, vitamin D that helps with serotonin and dopamine, balancing out our gut so we're not so foggy-headed, and then self-loathing because we didn't do anything. There's so many things that work, that are available, that are right there, and that don't require tons of time or money or resources. We've got the internet at our fingertips. I was hanging out in Africa on a mission trip when I was like 15, very different story, back life. And like, there was this guy who was like begging for textbooks, and he's like, you don't understand, we can't get them. We just want to learn, we just want to better our life, we just want to understand more. And I was like, wow. He's like, but textbooks are hundreds of dollars, and they're hard to come by, and they're in a different language. And now we have the internet that has Google Translate that can translate anything. And you know what I see in the internet cafes? I see Facebook and I see Killing Games. All of this stuff is accessible, available. There's groups for literally every single one of the things I mentioned to ask questions, to be curious, to learn, to explore, to not feel like you're going to fail. Learn how to make soap. Learn how to make natural beauty products out of yogurt and honey. Have fun. Do stuff. Explore. Play. Do those things that you always wanted to do that you didn't have time for. Panic a little. That's fine. Go buy some toilet paper. I get it. But here we are, my loves. This grand opportunity. May you use it for the highest good. I love you.